Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Jones and Ford, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders on this Monday evening. Yes, it is Preds Insiders, another training camp edition. Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, joined by Adam Finkin of The Athletic. Adam, it's great to see your face.
Thank you. It's great to see your face from a socially distanced perspective.
Yes, so it is.
We are following the rules here at 102.5 The Game.
Yes, we are. We're always following the rules here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. And let's start off, before we get into some of your thoughts on training camp so far for the Nashville Predators, as they are now a week in to training camp. Congratulations to Roman Josi. Obviously, this was expected today, being named a finalist for the Norris Trophy, yes, along with John Carlson of Washington and Victor Hedman of Tampa Bay. So Roman Josi in pursuit of his first ever Norris Trophy and to become the first ever Preds defenseman to win the award, being nominated as a finalist today.
It still boggles my mind that a Predators defenseman has never won the Norris Trophy. And I know this happened before my time in Nashville. I know that there are a lot of Predators fans who are upset that Shea Weber did not win the Norris Trophy the final year that Nick Lidstrom was nominated.
Yes, that would have been 2011.
Yes.
And a lot of people thought Nick Lidstrom won the award because
it was his last one,
going to be his last season, and then it turned out not to be.
I've heard plenty of that from Predators fans since I've been here, but
not only that one, but Erik Karlsson in 2012, where I mean, Erik Karlsson had like 30 plus points more than Shea Weber did that year, but Shea Weber was so dominant in 2012. He was an all around defenseman, where Erik Karlsson was Erik Karlsson, just a, you know, offensive defenseman, a great one at that, elite one back then with the Ottawa Senators, but Shea Weber got robbed twice in 2011 and 2012. And I think we've discussed this many times before here in the last handful of months that Roman Josi would get robbed as well if John Carlson were to go on and win.
I am very curious to see how the voting shakes out now. We at the Professional Hockey Writers Association vote on the Norris Trophy, and our ballots will be publicly released following the announcement of the awards, which are scheduled, I think, in the conference finals. So not for a month and a half. So until then, we cannot reveal the order of our ballots. I will say that Roman Josi was, of course, on my Norris Trophy ballot. But I am very curious to see how the voting shakes out, because I believe those of us who vote on the award who are more analytically inclined absolutely see the all-around value and ability of Roman Josi. But I wonder if, for lack of a better term, the dinosaurs among us in the voting block see simply the points from John Carlson and give him the award solely based on that. Now, John Carlson did have a strong year in other areas. I do not believe he is as much of a liability defensively as he is made out to be. But when you look at how Roman Josi plays and then you see the numbers that back it up, you know, he hit another gear this year that I honestly wasn't sure he had. Not to say that he couldn't reach it, but I thought he was already so good already. And to see how even better he could be, I mean, for me, it's a no-brainer, but we'll see if my colleagues agree.
Well, speaking of Roman Josi, at Sunday's scrimmage, it seemed like, by video of what I saw on social media and what I assume you saw in person, was that Roman Josi continues to do Roman Josi things, even though it's just a scrimmage in the middle of July.
And one thing, and I'm going to plug another podcast on our show here, but at theathletic.com, Craig Custance has a new episode of his Full 60 podcast that came out today. It's the Norris Trophy ballot episode.
Oh, okay.
And he spoke to Nick Bonino about Roman Josi also about John Carlson just because of his familiarity with Carlson when Bonino was on the Pittsburgh Penguins. But
sure.
Nick Bonino did a really great job of just explaining from, you know, from a first person on ice level how great Roman Josi is and the things that make him so great. So when you're done listening to Predators Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, log on to theathletic.com, full 60 podcast, and listen to Craig Custance's interview with Nick Bonino.
So Roman Josi yesterday at practice continued to do Roman Josi things with a beautiful goal.
I did not disregard your question. Okay. I just wanted to put a plug
in
there.
It kind of seemed like it, so no. I wanted to just... No, I'm just kidding. Just wanted to remind you.
Yes. No, he basically took it 1-on-3 and was able to score. And at one point, I think he lost control of the puck, but quickly got it back and was able to score. You know, certainly, I'm very excited just for having hockey back in general, but also looking forward to seeing how Roman Josi, who was playing really, really well down the stretch before the season abruptly ended in March, seeing if he can pick up where he left off against the Arizona Coyotes in a couple of weeks.
So yesterday they did have that scrimmage.
Yes.
What were maybe one or two takeaways that you had from the scrimmage yesterday?
It's hard to say because, it was less, it was a scrimmage, but it was more game situations than an actual game.
Mm-hmm.
They started with 15 minutes of 5-on-5 play. Then they did some 4-on-4. They did some special teams. So it was more putting them into game situations versus an actual scrimmage. But, I thought, the play by Roman Josi certainly stood out. No one scored in the 5-on-5 portion, by the way. it's hard to manually track these things. I'm so used to having the statistics and replays and stuff like that. So, it is harder for someone like me to track what's going on. But you could see the intensity being ramped up. And I think you've seen that over the course of every day of camp, which was John Hines's plan all along. They have the day off from camp today. They'll practice again tomorrow. But certainly, I think the coaching staff was pleased with what they saw. And now they'll take the video that they recorded from the scrimmage and put that into practice for the next several days before they leave on Sunday for Edmonton.
So the Jofa line was paired up with Turris, Duchesne, and Granlund.
Yes, they were matched against each other.
To start that 15-minute 5-on-5, as I saw on Twitter.
Yes.
And, one of the question marks of this training camp, since John Hines has put the Jofa line together, is what is Turris, Duchesne, and Granlund capable of, and how are they going to perform once the rubber meets the road August 2nd against Arizona, game one of that qualifying round. What has kind of been your impression of that trio together for the first week of training camp?
Well, here comes another plug. Tomorrow at The Athletic, I wrote a story about whether or not Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Victor Arvidsson can recapture their magic in the postseason, in general, but in the postseason, because that's what's about to happen. But one point I make in that story is we've seen it over the past two postseasons that Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson cannot do this alone. They cannot carry the Predators to postseason success on their own. And we've seen it in the past three playoff series they've played. Colorado in the first round 2 years ago, Winnipeg in the second round 2 years ago, and Dallas, especially Dallas, last year. So they're going to need some help. And that Kyle Turris, Matt Duchesne, Mikhail Granlund line, which really has very little experience together, is going to have to raise its game. I mean, Granlund and Duchesne have basically been attached at the hip through most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Turris is the outlier. But John Hines likes that all three of them are skilled with and without the puck and praise their intelligence. But all three of those players had their own struggles this year. I mean, especially Kyle Turris, which we've discussed ad nauseum. But Mikhail Granlund, until the coaching change, was a non-factor. Matt Duchesne was up and down. So individually, just like the members of the Jofa line, they're going to need to raise their games in order for them to be able to play well together. So I like the idea of it, but we don't have much of a body of work to go off of. And I guess, I asked John Hines yesterday, at what point would he like to have a clear picture of what his lineup is going to be for game one against Arizona? And he said, by the end of this week or the early in the week in Edmonton. So that exhibition game they're playing July 30th against Dallas, I think is going to be as close to the real thing as you're going to get. And that might be our first real indication of how that line will work.
Or who will be in net. And that's another big question in training camp. One of the top questions in the NHL, if you read any league-wide stories about training camp, is who's going to start for the Preds, Pecorine or UC Saros? What's been your impression of those two through a week of practice?
I think they've both looked good. Again, it's harder for me, especially with goaltenders. It's hard to, for me to analyze goaltenders on the fly just because I don't have the level of expertise as others
do in
that regard.
Well, especially in practice because everything is happening so fast.
Yes.
The drills, it's bing, 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 bing with the shots.
Yes.
That isn't exactly what UC Saros and Pecorine are going to see in game action, is a forward coming down every 3 seconds shooting on them.
Yeah, and look, I know that we've talked about this. I know that every Predators conversation we've had since on this station, since camp opened, and even beforehand, was what the goaltender situation is going to be. And you're right, it is a topic of conversation in the league. There are other teams who are having similar situations, including their opponent. I mean, you really can't go wrong with either Darcy Kemper or Antti Raanta if you're the Arizona Coyotes, but one of them is going to have to start game one. The New York Rangers have some questions as well. The Pittsburgh Penguins as well with either Matt Murray or Tristan Jarry. Like there are multiple teams that are having this question during their return to play training camps. But, I said it when I was on with you and Joe on Friday when you were filling in for Jared and Floyd, that statistically, it just makes all the sense in the world to go back to UC Saros. But, emotionally, it's not an easy decision to make if you're the Predators, considering how important Pecorine has been to this organization for as long as he has. And by the way, I was not at Nashville Motor Speedway while we were doing the interview. As you know, I have terrible phone service in my apartment. So I was standing outside of my building and there were cars coming by. So I wasn't at the Speedway, but I had to make sure that we had crystal clear reception during our conversation.
Well, then when you were standing outside and some people were speeding by you.
Yes.
And they weren't following the speed limit because every
certainly sounded like it.
Every minute and a half, it was zoom, zoom, just like you would hear at a NASCAR race.
Yeah, the speed limits at the intersection of 12th and Grundy in the Gulch area, not followed regularly.
Coming up next, we specifically did not talk Ryan Johansson or the Jofa line because we wanted to get to it next. John Hines had some interesting comments Friday afternoon on Jared and the GM as it pertains to Ryan Johansson. We will get into that coming up next. He's Adam Vinken. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vinken of The Athletic this Monday evening. Preds Insiders is back to the regular Monday-Wednesday cadence within your work week. Now that we have training camp and next week we have an exhibition game to watch on Thursday. You can also hear that game, that exhibition game against the Dallas Stars on 102.5 The Game here starting at 2 o'clock with the pregame 3 o'clock puck drop before the Preds take on the Arizona Coyotes in the qualifying round. And Preds Insiders is brought to you every week by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry for all your dental needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard, downtown Nashville. And Osteo Strong, Nashville. New sponsor, thank you for jumping aboard Osteo Strong Nashville. So Adam Vinken is with me here in studio. And Adam, John Hines made an appearance Friday afternoon with Jared and the GM, or neither Jared nor the GM. It
you
was
and
myself
Joe.
And Joe Rexroad. And he had some interesting comments as it pertains to Ryan Johansson. He mentioned early in the interview that a lot of players were doing a great job with attention to detail as the first week was coming to a close with training camp. I asked him if Ryan Johansson was one of those players and whether or not the break did him any good. There's been a higher attention of detail from players that may not have performed to their potential back in the regular season. A, is Ryan Johansson one of those players? And B, do you feel like the break did him some good?
Yes, Ryan is one of those players, and I do think that the break did him well. He's a guy that he wasn't happy with his year. He's got a lot of pride. He's been a big part of this team's success, and I think he felt like just towards his teammates and the organization and things that he felt like he wanted to be better. He put some work in during the pause, and he and I had some really good talks about what we need from him and what certain things that need to be better. And you know, he's made those adjustments during the pause, and now he's come back here. And again, we've also talked with him. He needs to be, if he wants to be a driver on our team and be a top line center, the way you practice, the detail of the practice, the fitness level you have to be at, you know, inspiring your teammates with not just your talent level, but your work ethic and drive. You know, that's what a number one center in the NHL needs to do. And you know, I think he's coming along nicely right now, but there's still another level, you know, we got to get him to before we, as we continue to move through camp and make sure that he can be the guy that we need him to be game one.
So that was John Hines Friday afternoon, and Adam, some interesting comments there from John Hines towards Ryan Johansson, saying that they've had a lot of good talks over the course of, I guess you could say, quarantine, mm-hmm. ever since the season pause.
Yep.
And that he's also had discussions with Johansson essentially saying, look, the work ethic has to match the talent level that he has as a number one center in the National Hockey League. And that's something that we kind of already knew about Ryan Johansson, but to hear his head coach come out and say that in the way that he did Friday, I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I mean, I assume that you and I both agree that Ryan Johansson unquestionably was the Predators' most disappointing player during the
without question
season. He had 36 points in 68 games, which is not good.
Yeah.
to put it one way.
I mean, he was more disappointing for me than Pecorine, because you know at some point this regression was going to happen with Pecorine.
Right.
He could bounce back,
yes,
here in the qualifying round of the postseason. But Ryan Johansson, in the prime of his career, at the season pause, 14 goals, 22 assists, and 36 points in 68 games. Not anything close to what you would expect out of your number one center that you're paying $8 million to.
Right, and we talk about the reunion of Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson. I mean, the success of that line, and I would argue the success of the entire team in the postseason, hinges on the resurgence of Ryan Johansson. There, of course, are other players who are important. We talked about Roman Josi. We talked about the goaltenders. But if you're looking for a player who absolutely needs to raise his game in order for this team to play well, Ryan Johansson is clearly number one. And I remember a column that Joe Rexroad wrote during the four-month hiatus about Ryan Johansson. And he spoke to Ryan, and Ryan said that the season he had, quote-unquote, chewed me up. And he took it really hard. You could tell just by reading it. I'm sure it sounded like that on the phone when Joe was speaking to him as well, but you could certainly tell that it ate him up, that he did not perform to the level expected of him. So, you know, there are multiple players, countless players, who are coming back around the league where you say to yourself that this four-month break could be a blessing in disguise, and Ryan Johansson is absolutely on that list. If he can find his game again, not only does it raise the level of his line mates, who also need to step their games up for a variety of reasons, it raises the level of the entire team. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that, well, as I'm thinking about it in my head, it sounds like a stretch, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that the Predators' success in this postseason is largely contingent on what Ryan Johansson does.
I would 1,000% agree. I said last week that what version of Ryan Johansson shows up is a bigger question to the Predators' hopes of going far in the playoffs than who starts in net, Pecorine or UC Saros. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
I mean, when you think of not only the 2017 postseason version of Ryan Johansson, but also 2018, mm-hmm. where he had 14 points in 13 games against Colorado and Winnipeg, I mean, that line did all of the heavy lifting.
Right.
Especially in the Winnipeg series. They shared that heavy lifting with the Sissons, Bonino, Watson
especially
line.
In the first round.
In the first round against Colorado.
And then in the second round, what we talked about before.
Right.
Like, they cannot do it alone.
They tried to do it alone because that's the only option they had.
Because the Fiala-Turris-Smith line was non-existent.
Exactly. So maybe these three being reunited after a four-month break is going to be the best thing that ever happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan Johansson is going to dictate how well that line does.
Oh, for sure. And Victor Arvidsson, you know, he's going to most benefit from this break because it allowed him to get back up to speed, no pun intended, because as he perhaps inadvertently revealed yesterday, the other day, suffered a knee injury at the hands of Robert Bortuzzo when he took that cross check in November. And he mentioned that he was playing catch up with his conditioning throughout the rest of the regular season, which had an effect on his speed. And when I look at Philip Forsberg's season, he was on pace for 58 points over an 82-game season, which is, you know, right around what his career average is. You know, I think his career high is 64 points. So, like, the high 50s, low 60s is around what you expect from Philip Forsberg based on his career. But outside of that blazing hot start that he had, where I think he scored in five consecutive games to start the season, five or six, outside of that start.
Four. Five of six to start.
Okay, five of six to start. Outside of that start, he really did not take over games with regularity. And we remember that he went 16 consecutive games without a goal down the stretch. So for me, for Forsberg, I didn't look at his season and say he was doing anything wrong necessarily. It just was not there for him this year. So, you know, Ryan Johansson, you know, what's the saying? The tide that lifts all boats? Is that the saying? The rising tide lifts
yes,
all boats?
Yes.
Or something like that? He's the tide. And Forsberg, Arvidsson, and the entire team are the boats.
There you go.
I think that's the saying. You can tweet at me and tell me that I'm wrong. But I think that's the book.
At Adam Vingan.
Yes.
To your point about Philip Forsberg, he had 9 goals in the first 12 games of the season, then 12 goals in the next 51 games.
Yeah.
And he did not score a goal in February.
Yes.
His own month, he did not score a goal. So Philip Forsberg, I would agree. And even despite the hot start, he never had a multi-goal game until the New Jersey game, the right. night before February began. And then he had a multi-goal game
against Dallas, right?
In Montreal,
oh, Montreal,
right before the season pause.
Right.
But we all know there were stretches of past regular seasons where he would take over and basically steer the offense
right.
in whichever direction he was taking them.
Yeah, and he's the franchise leader in playoff goals and points. So he is a very much a playoff performer.
And so is Ryan Johansson.
And so is Ryan Johansson.
You take out the 2019 postseason, really, for both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, the 2019 postseason, I think Johansson only had 2 points in 6 games against the Stars. Philip Forsberg, 2 points in 6 games. I mean, that line was...
They scored one
not
goal.
Not good.
That line was on the ice for 1 5-on-5 goal in 6 games. That's... Which you can read more about tomorrow on theathletic.com. But
there
they were
go.
On... They were outscored 4-1 in 6 games at 5-on-5 when they were on the ice.
So Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson as a duo, but when you throw Victor Arvidsson in there to make it a trio,
mm-hmm.
and if you're getting the 100% healthy version of Victor Arvidsson,
right.
you have to think that they will at least be productive. How effective and how dominant they can be is yet to be determined, but... That trio, you would think, will be at least productive.
You would hope so.
You would hope so.
Because if they're not, we've seen, like we were talking about, we've seen it both ways. We've seen what happens when they're the only line carrying the team. That doesn't work out well. We've seen what happens when they don't play well. That doesn't end well. So you need them to play well. You need the Duchene line to play well. And heck, you might even need one more line to play well after that. I mean, the Bonino line was... You know, the most consistent during the regular season. And we saw in Colorado a couple of years ago just how valuable the Bonino-Sissons-Watson combination was in not only scoring, mm-hmm. but shutting down the Nathan MacKinnon line with Landeskog and Rantanen. So you're going to need another line like that too. But, you know, I'm hopeful that the Forsberg-Johansson-Arvidsson combination can recapture its magic, as I said earlier.
Coming up next, the Predators' postseason appearance would be a success if... ... We'll complete that thought. Coming up next, he's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the show on this Monday evening. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vinken of The Athletic, Preds Insiders, here with you. The Preds will get back to practice tomorrow at noon. Darren Donick and Chase will be broadcasting live from Bridgestone Arena with all the latest there from Predators training camp later this week, July 26th. So that is on Sunday. They will be departing for the hub city of Edmonton. Preseason, or not preseason, but exhibition matchup against the Dallas Stars, July 30th. Qualifying round, August 2nd against Arizona. By the way, what do you think about the NHL going with rivalry games and exhibitions next
I like
week?
It because it, I mean, it gives you something to sink your teeth into. Like, it's all geographical rivalries, basically.
Pittsburgh, Philly.
Florida, Tampa.
Right.
Washington, Carolina.
Isn't Montreal, Toronto one of them?
Montreal, Toronto. Flames, Oilers. You know, it's you know, it makes sense. Because, you know, the last thing I want to watch is a Predators, Panthers. I've watched enough meaningless Predators, Panthers games every September normally.
Well, they
would. Two in one day sometimes.
Sure. But they, you know, they wouldn't be playing against each other, obviously, in different hub cities. So
yes.
I was honestly thinking that they were going to go the route of maybe Predators versus Oilers or Predators versus Canucks and not put two rivals together where, I mean, if you're Ryan Ellis going into that game, it's the last game before the qualifying round.
Right.
This is the team that knocked you out in the Winter Classic on New Year's Day.
And knocked him out.
Right.
Oh, sorry.
This is the...
They knocked the team out and Ryan Ellis.
Essentially, yes.
Yes.
Yes. But, you know, is there any worry that some of those old feelings can come back in an exhibition game and then all of a sudden you're risking yourself on both sides? I mean,
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. You know, it's different because it's not a normal preseason game in the sense that, you know, that's the one game they have before they play actual postseason games. You know, maybe the juices will be flowing a little bit more than, you know, a game in late September under normal circumstances, but I don't expect too many fireworks. But it should be fun. It always is.
If the juices are flowing, that probably means UC Saros is in net.
Huh.
Do you like that?
Goodbye, everybody. There was no way we can top that. So let's just end the show early.
All right. So I left what you would call a cliffhanger.
Yes.
At the end of last segment. The Predators playoff appearance would be a success if ... Adam Vinken, how would you complete that thought?
I think they have to win a minimum of two rounds. They have to beat the Arizona Coyotes in the qualifying round, which is a best of five series. And then they need to upset, based on seeding, one of the four round robin Western Conference teams, whether that's the St. Louis Blues, Colorado Avalanche, Dallas Stars, or Vegas Golden Knights. I think that if they can get to the second round, at least.
Well, technically round one. They're going to call that round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Well, if they win the qualifying round and then they beat one of those teams in round one, they'll get to round two.
Yes,
So getting to round two, at the very least, would be a moderate success. But for it to even be considered a success, they have to get to at least the second round, which means they have to win two series.
Okay. So are you viewing this as since the last 4 months have essentially been a reset, that the expectations are being reset as well?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. And it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure there are fans who are listening who are thinking to themselves, well, what happens if the Predators lose in the qualifying round? Or what happens if the Predators lose in the first round? They beat Arizona and then lose to one of the four teams that's already advanced to the first round.
And you're talking about St. Louis, Colorado, Vegas, or Dallas.
Right.
I mean, that's no easy task.
No, it's not. But I'm wondering, there are fans who are certain to say, well, if they lose again in the postseason, isn't it time to make a big change like we talked about last year when they lost in the first round? Well, you have to think about the landscape of the NHL right now. The salary cap isn't moving next season. A lot of teams have incredibly tight cap situations. You can't really blow up a team when there aren't very many teams that can take on your player because they have cap problems of their own. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I don't expect any team to really have any significant off-season changes just because of how the salary cap is playing out. Just because they don't they the space isn't there to make these seismic trades unless you trade one player, unless you trade two players with equal salaries. But, you know, if the Predators were to lose to Arizona and people are expecting it to blow up, I'm not sure. But then you have a 12.5% chance of drafting Alexis Lafreniere, and everything starts over again. So,
sure.
There you go.
Sure. And that lottery would happen very quickly after the qualifying round,
yes.
Right?
It would happen before the first round starts, I believe.
I think it's like August 10th yeah. or 11th.
Yes. Because I think August 9th or 10th is a full off day. Like, I think the last set of games in the qualifying slash round robin area is the 9th of August, I think. And then yes. the 10th is a full day off for everybody. And I think it might be on that day.
Yes. So theoretically, the Predators could be playing in a game 5 against the Coyotes.
And then less than a week later.
And then less than 24 hours later, you're learning whether or not you're getting the first overall pick.
Yeah, that's true.
Because game 5 would be August 9th. For the Nashville Predators against the Coyotes.
Yeah. That's true.
And then the next day, you're finding out whether or not you're picking first.
Yeah. And that changes a lot of things.
So, look, I said last week that since everything is just so unpredictable about this tournament, that I expect them to beat Arizona. I also expect them to not lay a complete egg. And if that were to happen, then that would be, I mean, a lot of fans would view that as disastrous if they were to go out to Edmonton and get swept by the Coyotes or lose in four and not really be in the series and they're playing catch up the whole time.
Right.
Like, if they go down in five to the Coyotes and it's a hard fought series, you feel like they gave it their best and it just wasn't good enough. After the last 4 months, are you going to look at that as a failure?
Yeah. I mean, that is a good point. You know, expectations among the fan base are going to need to be reset. Pretty much for every fan base, with the exception of maybe the teams at the very top.
Like for you, at the time of the season pause, the Predators...
Second wild card spot.
And they were just so Jekyll and Hyde. They would take a step back and then, you know, follow it with a step forward.
I like to think of them more of the Paula Abdul, MC Scat Cat, two steps forward, two steps back.
There you
versus
go.
Versus Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes.
But anyway.
But they would win three, lose three.
I do think they were starting to trend in the right direction, though, before the season.
But that doesn't mean anything to this tournament, does
it? No, it does not.
It doesn't. So what I'm getting at is back in mid-March, I don't think we would have expected this team to go out and win a first-round series against whomever they were playing.
Probably St. Louis.
I don't think any of us would have expected, even though they swept the season series from the Blues.
Yes.
I don't think any of us would have sat here and said, you know what, I expect the Nashville Predators to beat the St. Louis Blues in a 7-game series. Right.
But I expect the Predators to beat the Arizona Coyotes in a 5-game series. I just think that even with the Predators' ups and downs, the Coyotes have had theirs as well.
Right.
And I look at their team, and they should be so much better than they are. You have a team with Taylor Hall and Phil Kessel and Clayton Keller and Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Nicholas Jalmarsson and Darcy Kemper and Antti Raanta and Nett. It should be so much better than it is. And defensively, they're very good, particularly because of the goaltenders.
And they have given the Preds fits over the last 2-3 years.
But they can't score. Like, that's the problem. I think they're a top five team in goals against and like a bottom five team in goals for. So I think the Predators have more offensive weapons to win this series from that perspective. And I think it's a bad matchup for Arizona in terms of the way the Predators like to play versus the way the Coyotes like to play. I think it would definitely be a disappointment if they lose this series. You look at some of the other series in the qualifying rounds, you know, we look at the Western Conference, you know, you look at Calgary and Winnipeg. That's a toss-up to me.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Edmonton, Chicago. I would give Edmonton the slight edge, but it's still kind of a toss-up. Right?
I would give the Oilers a pretty big edge.
Oh, you would?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You look at, what's the other one? Vancouver, Minnesota.
Vancouver.
Yes.
Big edge.
Yes. So I look at the Predators-Coyote series, and I just think when I look at everything statistically, it all points, I mean, most of it, enough of it, points to the Predators for them to be the favorite.
So do you think they would be the second largest favorite in the West behind Vancouver in the qualifiers?
Yes.
So you would go Vancouver 1, Nashville 2, Edmonton 3, and then Calgary or Winnipeg is 4?
I might give the slight edge to Winnipeg.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's accurate. What about you?
I mean, I would probably go Edmonton 1.
See,
especially if Chicago doesn't have Corey Crawford.
Yes, that is your doppelganger.
Yes. If they don't have Ryan Porth in net.
Well, you better get your butt up to Edmonton and gear up number 50, because they wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
I need to have less milkshakes than I had in the last 24 hours.
But because when I look at that series, I mean, there's a lot of high-powered off. I mean, you've got Draisaitl and McDavid versus Kane and Taves and other players. And I mean, it's sort of the experience. It's sort of like the experience factor, right? Like the Blackhawks have so much more experience than the Oilers in this situation. I think experience will matter just because it's so unprecedented.
The Hawks do have experience with only a few players, though. They have a ton of youth.
They
on
do
that
have
team.
A lot of youth on the team now. I think that series is going to be the most exciting to watch from a. Just, I'm going to turn on a hockey game and watch.
Please, yeah.
I think every game is going to be high scoring.
Also, do you give the Oilers much of an edge that they're essentially at home without their crowd?
No, because I think they may not even be allowed to use their home dressing room all the time. I think when they're the road team, they might have to use the road room.
Really?
I wonder if that will be the case. I feel like I've heard something to that effect, but that would be interesting if they were forced to use the visiting room in their own building. But
coming up next, speaking of hockey, playoff hockey for that matter, played without fans, what is it going to look like? What is it going to sound like? We'll weigh in coming up next. Speaking of Häagen-Dazs, or speaking of milkshakes,
I had
Häagen-Dazs yesterday, and I think you as a former Washington Capitals beat writer would appreciate that, because Bruce Boudreau loves Häagen-Dazs.
As he said, most famously, it's never too early for ice cream.
You're damn right. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we'll continue the playoff hockey discussion right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth, Adam Vinken here with you on this Monday evening. Slapshot Radio coming at you at the top of the hour, continuing the Preds talk as they prepare for the Arizona Coyotes in the qualifying round. Practice begins tomorrow at noon for the Nashville Predators as they start essentially week two of training camp. And on Sunday, they are flying to Edmonton, to the Hub City, and then take on the Dallas Stars in the exhibition game next Thursday. And Adam, once they get up there and start playing games, they're going to be playing games without fans.
Yep.
And we've known that for
a long time.
A long time that this would be the case. But now we have a little bit of a sample size from other sports of what games, A, with fake crowd noise, or B, with just the natural sound from the venue itself. We're starting to get a feel for what that looks and sounds like.
I did catch some of those MLB exhibition games the other night. I think the Yankees were playing.
Summer camp games.
Summer camp games, excuse me, that the Yankees were playing the Mets and I can't remember the other one. I think probably
it was White Sox Cubs.
White
last
Sox
night.
Cubs. Yeah. And I was watching the Yankees Mets game, the one that was at Citi Field. So it was a couple of nights ago. And I didn't mind the pumped in crowd noise. So at least it was only pumped in on the broadcast. I don't think it was pumped in the stadium.
It was.
Okay.
That's how you could hear it, because it was in the stadium that you could tell it was off in a distance.
Yeah. I wonder if the NHL is going to do it only on the broadcast and not in the crowd.
I have a hunch that it's going to be in the arena. That they're going to try to deliver as much of an in-arena experience as possible without 18,000 fans.
And I'm very curious to see how the NHL stages these games in terms of camera angles and other things where the fans might have been in the seats.
Yeah.
You know, for example, as you know, I am a fan of professional wrestling, and they have been doing shows without fans for as long as sports have been out of play. And it took them a while to figure it out, but then they realized, you know, how to angle the cameras in a certain way so that you don't see the stands as much and you don't see the empty space as much, and it looks a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if the NHL will take a cue from some of the other sports in terms of how to set their camera angles. Maybe they'll experiment with different camera angles. I think I saw Greg Wyshynski of ESPN report yesterday that there's supposed to be some sort of conference call this week for the NHL and when they're going to unveil the details of how this is going to work, which I'm very curious about.
Well, in those baseball games, you could see more sponsorships being displayed within the broadcast, whether it was, right. you know, tarps on empty seats
what's
in the
outfield.
What's
the NFL doing? The NFL's tarping up like the first six or seven rows, right? And putting advertisements on them. Isn't that what the NFL is doing?
I believe so, but on the broadcast.
Right.
I mean, I think Fox is trying to pull off putting a Madden NFL video game crowd within the real life game in the stadium.
I watched one of the MLS is back games. I think it was the first one, which was Orlando and Miami, I think.
Yes, yes.
And there was no crowd noise.
That was hard to watch.
That was very weird. Even if the idea of fake crowd noise, just the idea of it makes you want to, you know, like watching a game with no noise other than the players playing is very unsettling to me.
Especially if there's not a whole lot of effects
right.
on the field, which there aren't
in soccer.
In a soccer match.
Right.
And there was a soccer match, I think Atlanta United was playing in one on Fox.
Uh-huh.
Fox piped in fake crowd noise, and I enjoyed that game better than I did that Orlando-Miami game.
Yeah.
Even though I knew it was fake, it just felt like it
felt
was
normal.
It felt like it was a normal soccer game.
Yeah, it felt normal. So I am very curious to see what the NHL is going to do. You know, it's funny, John Hines mentioned, I think it was last week, well, it had to be last week because last week was the first week of camp, that he had heard that perhaps the home teams for the games in Edmonton and Toronto will have their goal horn and goal song when they score.
I would almost expect that for both teams.
Yeah, he wasn't 100% certain on that. He must have heard it in passing, but just the idea that he mentioned it I thought was interesting.
And I do wonder what advantages the home team technically has other than getting that last change.
Really, really nothing. And I wrote a story, I think it was earlier this month. I've lost track of time. It was earlier this month about how players will be psychologically affected by playing without fans. And I spoke to Dr. Colleen Hacker, who has served as the mental skills coach for both the U.S. women's national soccer and ice hockey teams, among other roles. And she said that there are going, I mean, to summarize, she said a lot of very interesting things. You should go and read it. but to summarize, that there are going to be players affected by this because we often hear that players find the fans, their home fans, to be a vital source of energy. Well, they're not going to be
right.
there. So how do players manufacture their own energy when they don't have the fans to help them do it?
And not just the energy, but the emotion within,
right.
you know, scoring a big goal in front of your home crowd. You can just tell that there's just a different reaction when you score a big playoff goal on your home ice versus when it's on the road.
Right. And Matt Duchene, I spoke to Matt Duchene for the story, and he brought up an interesting point too, when he said that the highs won't be as high, but the lows won't be as low either. He said, like, one of the worst feelings is being scored on in overtime when you're the road team. Like, it's that extra salt in the wound when the visiting team, when the home team stands up, you know, the fans stand up and cheer and you're, you know, slogging off the ice. So he said it's going to be like being scored on in practice. Like, it's going to stink, but you'll get over it a lot quicker. So that's another thing to keep in mind as well.
Interesting. Adam Vinken of The Athletic has been our guest here on Preds Insiders. As always, Adam, appreciated your visit. Thank you so much for stopping by, and we are inching ever so closer to playoff hockey. And positive news today, I did not get to this in the first segment, positive news today from the NHL, only two positive tests out of the 2,600 that they performed in the first week of testing. Yes, 2,618 tests for COVID-19, only two positive tests.
That's great news. And you know what else is great news? Wearing a mask. So
yes.
Please wear a mask, Nashville.
Mask up if you want to see Pecorino mask up.
Yes. That's all I have to say.
Adam, thank you.
You're very welcome.
For Adam Vinken, I'm Ryan Poore. Thank you so much for listening to this week's version of Preds Insiders. We'll be back with you Wednesday at 6. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.